Love and marriage, right? What did that thing say? Love, hate, marriage? Love, hate. We're in our series, and our series is, of course, Proverbs, Wisdom Adventure. And this is my 13th lesson on it. So it's been a month of Sundays, not just a month. And and Doug did one. So this is actually the 14th lesson that we've done on Proverbs. So there we go, right? And last week we talked about family. I'm going to follow that up this week with marrying well. And I think it's got something for all of us. So, you know, there are a few things in life that we can get by with messing up. And it just doesn't mess up or, you know, make too big of a difference over the overall scheme of things. But then there are a few things in life that you just can't afford to mess up. Because if you mess these things up, they go with you for the rest of your life. So, at the very top of the list of things you just can't mess up is selection of your marital partner. So this is what we're going to be talking about today, next week. Lance will be here, and then for Mother's Day, and then we're going to pick it up again after that. This will be a two-parter. I was trying to jam it all into one. It's just not going to work. It's too important. There's just too much here. And so that's what we're going to be talking about. I think there's going to be something in it for everybody, even if you have the best marriage possible. I think that you're going to get something today, some things you can go home and talk about, say, hey, we need to talk about this. Maybe in your particular situation, you've had a failed marriage. Then there's definitely going to help you because God's not done with you yet. You're not dead. And so there's going to be somebody else coming along and we're going to get it right. It's going to work well for you. Maybe your marriage is just not doing well right now. You're not happy. And so this is going to really give you some things to ponder about and work on. And then others of you have never been married and one day you will be. And this is mostly for you. I really want to help you do this correctly. And I'm certain that if these principles that we're going to be talking about this week and the next time, if these principles were followed, there would be a lot fewer heartbreaks, a lot fewer broken dreams, a lot fewer broken marriages, and a lot fewer broken lives. So this is what we're after. Let's get in it. From Proverbs chapter 15, verse 17, it says this, a bowl of soup with someone you love is better than steak with someone you hate. Duh. What's wisdom trying to tell us here? Well, maybe, you know, you've had something in your life, you know, your marriage, where you were at home or maybe at the best of restaurants and you're sitting across the table from your spouse. This person that you've wanted to do life with. And you got the thickest, juiciest filet mignon. It's cooked perfectly. It's a wonderful meal. But you really can't enjoy it simply because of the coldness and the distance that you feel from the person across the table from you. See, this is it. This is what we're after because, you know, marriage is for keeps. Hear what I'm about to say now. Marriage is for keeps, one way or the other. Even if it fails, it's still going to go with you the rest of your life. It's for keeps. Now, if you've been reading Proverbs, and I hope you have, then you've read some of these verses that deal with this spousal relationship thing. And so remember that when Proverbs was written by Solomon, that Solomon wrote it for his son, giving his son instructions. So it's coming from a male perspective, a male gender. So what I want to do is I want to make it gender neutral. And so that we can all enjoy this and hear what God is really trying to say to us. And I'll show you this first one. I'll tell you what I'm doing here. Proverbs 25, 24. Better to live on a corner of a roof than share a house with a quarrelsome spouse. Now notice that spouse is in brackets. That originally says woman. Right? But how many of you know that it's just as bad to live with a quarrelsome guy, a guy that can't get happy about nothing, than it is to be with a wife that can't get happy about nothing. So that's what I'm after here. Now let me read it again. Better to live on a corner of a roof than share a house with a quarrelsome spouse. All right, next one, Proverbs 21:9. It is better to live alone in the corner of an attic than with a contentious spouse in a lovely home. Have the nicest home, big house, big living room, fancy furniture. I'd rather be in the attic all alone than to be with my wife. All mad. Read another one. Proverbs 21:19. Better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and ill-tempered spouse. Desert. Well, what is Lady Wisdom trying to teach us here and say to us? It's better to be anywhere than with someone that you're trying to do life with and you can't get along. In fact, you've come to the place where it's nearly hate. And this is what it's saying to us. So how can this huge, huge mistake be avoided? How can a single person end up with a person, a lifelong mate that will bring them lifelong love, lifelong intimacy, lifelong happiness, lifelong joy, instead of bringing them loneliness and disillusion and heartbreak? Is that possible? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Now, in this book, his book by Neil Clark Warren, it's called Finding the Love of Your Life. This book, I'm going to talk about it in just a second, but what he does is in this book is he breaks it down into 10 principles to find the love of your life, to find that you've got the right person. He breaks it down. And so what we're going to do right now is we're going to look at the very first principle. We're going to break those down. But here's what I really suggest doing. You see, it's kind of a novel idea that I really think that that a couple that is considering marriage, hooking up for life, that each one get a copy. We had four. I think we've already sold a couple. But anyway, we've got a few of these here. But I really think they're $15 a piece. But I think that if a couple would get together and read through this and just together, he get a copy and she get a copy, and they read through this together, page by page, chapter by chapter, and then discuss these things. You see, every single glitch that you're going to meet in your marriage is pretty much going to be discussed, novel idea, before you get married. Well, isn't that a novel idea? To talk about possible marital problems before you get married? Yeah, that's novel. It can happen. And by so doing, you can really come out on the top end of this thing. So what I want to do is I want to look at the seven things. And what he does is his first principle. Let me read it to you the way he says it. And then I'll read it to you the way I say it. He says that the principle number one is eliminate the seven most prevalent causes of faulty mate selection. Eliminate the seven most prevalent causes of faulty mate selection. I say eliminate the seven deadly things that will kill your marriage. And if we can do that, we're off to a great start. So here we go. Let's look at these seven deadly things. Number one, the decision to marry is made too quickly. The decision to marry is just made too quickly. There are studies that have been done that correlate between a long courtship and a successful marriage, and the correlation between a very short courtship and a heartbreaking, broken marriage. And I watch people do this all the time, even people that have gone to church here. They meet somebody that they hardly know, maybe a couple of months, and they've decided they're going to get married. And they won't talk, they won't listen to anybody, won't listen to the parents, won't listen to me, won't listen to anybody. If they ever ask me, I'll tell them, I say, well, what are you going to gain by hurrying? What have you got to lose by taking your time here? And they always give me this pretty static answer, and it pretty much goes like this. Well, we're in love, and we know we're meant for each other, that we're going to be happy together, and we just want to be together. No. What you really want is legal sex. And then you're afraid that you're going to lose this person, which would probably be the very best thing that could ever happen to you. Because if this person is planning their escape before, just because you want to take time in this relationship, if they're planning their escape now, then when you do get married, you can be sure they're going to plan their escape. And there's nothing to lose. You see, every month that you extend the courtship will only ensure the relationship, one way or the other. It'll ensure the relationship so that when you do walk down the aisle, that you are so confident that this is the person for you, that you're going to be happy. You'll walk down with that kind of confidence, knowing that you're off to a great start. Or it will erode, take your time, will erode the relationship, which is also a win-win situation. Because you're going to know that this person is not the right person for you. And you will avoid making the biggest mistake you've ever made in your whole life. You've got nothing to lose. I cannot remember one marriage that I thought was happening too quickly that was successful. No one. At the minimum, there should be at least 1 year. At the minimum. You see, there's so much to learn about that person. There's so much you don't know. There's so much to learn and to be known about them. Listen, the stakes are just high. The stakes are just too high. So that's number one. People just get married too quickly. Number two, the decision is made at too young of an age to be married. Now, we don't allow three-year-olds to play with knives. Why? They'll hurt themselves or kill somebody else, right? We don't allow 8-year-olds to drive automobiles. Why? They're not developed enough. They can't handle this. We don't allow teenagers to make public policies. Here's why. Is they're just not emotionally and mentally developed yet to handle those kinds of things. They won't make wise decisions and they'll kill themselves or they'll kill somebody else in the process. Very few people are really mentally and emotionally ready to marry before age 25. I know we don't like to hear that sometimes, but they really are not really ready. See, before that time, in your early 20s, late teens, what you're really doing is some intense identification work. You're really trying to figure out who you are. We don't know who we are yet. We don't know where we're going with our lives yet. We're still trying to figure all this out. We're identifying ourselves. I married when I was 19 years old. Yeah. That's my wife. Yeah. Ooh. I didn't know who I was. I didn't figure it out till I was 28 years old. In that time there, in those 9 years or whatever, I don't know who I am. I'm trying this, I'm trying that, I'm driving her crazy, I'm trying to raise a family. I'm really not ready for this thing. Now you couldn't have told me that then. But I wasn't. You see, I didn't figure it out. Now once I figured it out, man, I was on track to go. It makes a huge difference when you know who you are and where you're going with your life. But few human beings are there. People under 25 are doing what I want to call some autonomous work. You're still trying to figure out life without mom and dad. You know, mom and dad's helped you with life. Bed to sleep in, food to eat, and paying bills and all this stuff. Well, now you're trying to figure all this out. And listen, too much mom or too much dad in a marriage is not good. Too much mom or dad is detrimental to the marriage. I don't care if it's hers or if it's his. And this can be a problem, and you need to work this out. But before you're age 25, there's core value work that's going on, desperate core value work. What do you really believe? What do you really believe? What are you going to do for a career? You know, you're working this stuff out. What am I going to stake my life on? Before you're age 25, you're doing this core competencies. You know, what am I competent at? What do I do well? What do I enjoy doing well? In what direction do I want my life to go? Before age 25, there's spiritual formations that's still going on. You're working at this thing. You're trying to figure it out. Do I really believe in God? Is Jesus Christ who people really have told me that He is? And I've watched people growing up in this church right here. And when they get into this age, they start struggling here just a little bit. Well, is what I heard just from him right? Maybe I need to explore a little bit here. We don't know those things yet. We haven't settled in those things yet. We're still arranging our life. And so if I haven't arranged my life yet, for sure, if I'm going to orchestrate it around Jesus Christ and God, how in the world am I going to orchestrate a family? And there's these things that are just being developed in us, and all this development work's going on, and all this evolving's going on. To ask a person to make a proper selection for a mate that they're going to spend the rest of their life with and create a family with is just about asking too much. People just get married too young with all that going on. Even people in this church, even with the possibility of them getting married too young or getting married too soon, the possibilities of the marriage making it is not for you. Know the statistic. The marriages that have the best percentages of making it are people who get married at age 25 or later. The marriages that have the best percentages of failing, most likely to fail, are people who marry when they're teenagers or marry in their early 20s. See, it's just too important. I'm going to say it this way. Grow up before you get married. Number one, don't get married too soon. Number two, don't get married too young. Number three, what are both persons are too eager to be married? You know, we get marriage fever. And this is probably more prevalent in women than guys, but guys get it too. See, they think that marriage is going to satisfy, make all their loneliness happy, and it's going to heal all their loneliness and take care of all their brokenness and ensure their happiness, and it's going to make sure their lives are disciplined. That's kind of the perspective that a guy comes from sometimes. But people will tell themselves, you know, all my problems are going to disappear if I get married. Yeah. Let me tell you the truth. No. If you can't be single and be happy, there's no way in Hades that you're going to be happy connected with somebody and trying to make a life. If you can't be happy single, you're not going to be happy connected with somebody. And then if children come along, you're talking about a messed up life. You're going to think, what have I done? See, so you gotta not jump into this thing. Don't get that marriage fever thing. Number four. One or both may be choosing a mate to please someone else. Now, this happens a lot of times. You know, we jump into it prematurely because maybe parents say, man, I like her or I like him. You know, let's, why don't you guys get hooked up? Or you go to a family reunion, you know, and some in-law, outlaw comes up to them and says, hey, when are you guys gonna do? When are you guys gonna get hooked up? You know, get married. Or maybe it's the other part. Or maybe it's a friend, you know, and they kind of pushing you to do this. See, people begin this kind of a seek and betroth mission. And what I mean here is, you know, I'm worthy to be married too, right? I'm good looking. I'm pretty. I'm worth somebody, you know, and I want to be married too. That are the wrong reasons, folks. Don't do it for those things and for those reasons. That's bad stuff there. Number five. The experience base is way too narrow. This is a big one. See, people just don't have a full range of experience with one another. They've never been through a real tragedy yet. You don't know how he's going to respond to a tragedy. He doesn't know how she's going to respond to a tragedy. How are they going to handle tough stuff in life? You've never gone through probably a real full-blown out severe disagreement. I'm talking about when tempers flare and voices rage and you haven't gone through that yet. You don't know if you want to live with that. You don't know what's coming. You need to go through that at least once, right? You haven't worked out your financial quirks, and we've all got them. How are we going to handle the money? How much do you spend anyway? You know, we got to go through that kind of stuff. What about our vocational aspects of it? Is somebody still going to go to school? How are we going to pay for it? Maybe it's disciplining the children. How are we going to discipline the kids? And we'll talk about a little bit more about this in a few minutes. But these are the things. See, a lot of times people will get married and they've never worshiped together. I'm not talking about going to church. A lot of people go to church together before they get married, but they don't worship together. They don't really enter into worship. They don't really know where they are with this kind of stuff yet. Pray together, worship together. They simply don't know each other enough. And folks, these things come along eventually. And sometimes it's just too late. And these things are deadly, deadly to a marriage. Number six, the couple has unrealistic expectations. This is another big one. People, you know, they have these uncommunicated expectations without discussing stuff. We just think that that's how he's going to respond or she's going to respond and this is how our marriage is going to go. No, see, we usually typically have one or two models before we get married, and those are usually our parents, and these can be polar opposites. The way her parents did marriage might be totally opposite from the way my parents did marriage. And so we go into it with the expectations of the models that we've had. And this is sometimes really, really bad. For example, you know, the way, for example, in some homes, the man is the firm leader. And he's dad, and that's just dad. It's the way we're going to do it. In some homes, it's not that way. Some homes, it's the woman who is the firm leader. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just how the marriage worked. And so in some homes, you know, who's going to take care of the checkbook? I mean, who's going to take care of it? Both can, or maybe I'll talk there. But you know, who's going to do this? Because in some homes, dad takes care of the bills, checkbook, savings, make sure there's securities for the future and those kinds of things. In some homes, mom does it. And sometimes it's a his and hers. And so how are we going to do this? See, these are expectations that we get into. We need to discuss this stuff before it happens. Again, vocation. How are we going to go to school? And if we are going to go to school, how are we going to pay for it? What about discipline the children? See, in some homes, they really spank children. They really do. But in some homes, that's child abuse. So how are we going to do this? And who's going to do it? And how hard are we going to do it? You know, how are we going to handle this stuff? You see, these are marriage busters here. What about stay at home? Are we both going to work and have vocations, or is somebody going to be a stay at home? What are we going to do here? See, there's all of these answers. In some homes, it's lovey-dovey and huggy and, you know, and a lot of touching going on and I love yous. In some homes, it's hands off and never hearing I love you. Where are we with these issues? So, and it needs to be determined this, and I think this is a great point that I want to share with you. See, we do need to have models. I think we need to have two columns. Marriages we approve of and marriages we disapprove of. And there should be a top at each one. You know, all the people that you know and relationships that you're aware of, write them down and the marriages that they have. And so we have a model no and a model yes. And we do not want a marriage like this. You know, and no matter what, we're not going here. This is where we're not going. And so that's big. Decide, listen, I can't handle this right here. You know, before you get married. And then on the other column, you got these other ones. And again, at the top, you know, number them down. This is what we want. We want our marriage to be like theirs. I love the way they do this and the way they do that. And man, they just kind of, this is what I really want. And now you got something to work at. And there's a pattern. There's something that you can really shoot at. And I think that would be just so good. So what expectations do you have to build a marriage? What are your expectations? And see, again, most times these things never are discussed until there's an argument. And now it's too late. And it is just too important. It's just too important. What expectations do you have? These need to be touched and discussed and decided before you get married. Then number 7. One or both may have unaddressed, watch this now, significant. Everybody say significant. Significant personality or behavioral problems. We all got stuff, all right? We all got hidden pockets of brokenness inside of us and dysfunction. We all do, and we all push that stuff down. We don't want anybody to see it, so we kind of keep it down, keep it hidden. We definitely don't want the person that we want to spend the rest of our life with to know all of our junk. And so we kind of keep all this stuff pushed down. But some of us have significant problems. Let me say it this way. You don't go buy a house without having it inspected. You want that house inspected from top to bottom. You want to look at the foundation. Are there any foundational mess ups here? Is there termite damage? What about water damage? Electrical? How's electrical systems working? How about the roof? Does it leak? Plumbing? Is it okay? So we look at the house from top to bottom. Now, just because there's something wrong in the house doesn't mean you may not purchase the house. You may purchase the house and decide I'll fix it up. You know? So it doesn't mean you're not going to buy it. You just need to do some work here first. Now, what I'm trying to get to is this. See, I think it should be mandatory. I think it should be a law that people take personality examinations before they get married. You need to know what kind of a personality temperament you are. What it does is it examines your soul from top to bottom. And it shows you your weaknesses and it shows you your strengths. And it shows you what you're good at, what you're not good at, how God's wired you, why you figure out things the way you figure them out. And this is good to know about your spouse. You need to know why your spouse thinks this, or your future spouse. And this is how they're going to think. This is how they're wired. And you need to understand this stuff. Now, it doesn't mean because some faults show up that you don't buy the house. But it may mean you wait a while before you move in. We may need to do a little repair work here. Got it? And I think that's so important to understand. Then number seven. One or both have unaddressed significant personality. Oh, I've already done that one, haven't I? Wow, I'm moving here. Okay. So, there we go. Those are the seven deadliest mistakes that will just bust your marriage. And if you do those things, you can look. I got an email this week. Judy sent out the email telling everybody how good this lesson was going to be and all that stuff. And I got an email back from somebody. And they said, I don't think we should tell people to expect arguments. He says, I think we should tell people to expect adjustments. I like that. I think that's really good. But if you've got some of these seven in there, maybe a little bit more than adjustments. So those are those, and now I want to flip it just a little bit. Those things are detrimental to a marriage. I want to flip it a little bit and look at the positive things. If you put these in the marriage, these are the things you want to put in the marriage. Those other things are the things you want to keep out. Here are the things you want to put in. Make sure that these things are in a marriage. And so let me just start. I've got five of these. I'm only going to be able to get one this week. This is the part I'm not going to be able to cover, but I'm jamming this one in because it's so important. Because some of you I won't see again next week after next, and I just want to make sure you get this one. So let me ask you this. Is there a truth to opposites attract? Is there truth there? Yeah. So because people are opposites and they get married, that means the marriage is going to work, right? No. You see, the reason that it works is because of a core values. Down in the core, there's a core likeness in both people. Then opposites do attract and opposites do work. How about the thought that somebody completes me? You know? I'm weak in this area and they're strong in those areas, so we complete, and she's weak or he's weak and I'm strong, then I complete them. Is there a truth there? There's a truth there. There is a truth there. But again, it's because of the core values. Those things do work together if there's core values. Let me give you a scenario. So we got a hot redhead who, redhead woman. She loves the party life. Man, she likes going to the parties and, you know, every night she likes doing the dancing and the drinking and all that. Man, she is a party animal. She loves it. That's what she lives to do. But she meets this guy who's totally opposite, polar opposite from her. Okay? He likes to stay at home, read books, watch movies, and spend time with the family. But they kind of fall in love, you know? They kind of get together, and he says, okay, I'm gonna go to the clubs with you. I'm gonna do this stuff. And so they begin to go to the clubs, and they keep, every once in a while they'll spend some time at home, and they kind of, you know, but doing the club thing a lot. And so eventually they decide they've fallen in love. And even though they're opposites, they feel like they've attracted. And because they're weak and strong, then maybe this is going to work. So we're falling in love. We're going to get married. And so off to the chapel they run, and they tie the knot. And now you tell me how this plays out in about 2 or 3 years. If the core value isn't the same, we got a train wreck about to happen. He's going to come to the place where he cannot tolerate her going to the club, because she's not only wanting to go to the club with him, she's wanting to go with girls night out, she's wanting to spend time in the clubs. He can't tolerate that. She says, I can't stay at home all the time. Well, we've got a family now. We need to stay home. I want to be with you. I can't do it. I've got to have adventure. We got a train wreck. So how do we work here? There've got to be core values, core things that are the same in people. Now, so these are the things that I want to talk about, these five areas. And number one is the one we're going to get today. Number one is this. We have to have spiritual compatibility. If you get this one right, you can deal with a lot of stuff in life. If you get this one. So, spiritual compatibility. What the Bible calls this is equally yoked. If you're a person who has no interest at all in the things of the Spirit, spiritual things, you don't care a flip about Jesus or God or nothing like that, then you're best off marrying somebody just like that. Somebody that doesn't give a rip about God. You're going to be miserable. Because all she's going to do is get you saved, and all she's going to do is want to get you to church, and all she's going to do is talk to you about Jesus. You're going to be miserable. And on the other hand, if you're the kind of a person who has a real relationship with Jesus Christ and you love God, and you want to serve Him and minister for Him and sing and worship Him and all that stuff, and you want to raise your family understanding the importance of God and Jesus Christ, then you best marry somebody exactly like that. That has a real relationship with God and a love relationship with Jesus Christ. Because if you don't, you're going to be miserable. There's going to be an ache inside of you for every day of your life from then on. Let me read you this scripture. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14. Do not. Say that back to me. Do not. Do not be yoked together with unbelievers. That's not a suggestion, people. Do not. God is trying to tell you something. Don't do this. Don't go here. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? That's a real question. Somebody that's wanting to live for Jesus and live rightly and have a good life, you know, under the ministry of the Word of God, and then somebody that doesn't. What do those two have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? Again, somebody that wants to live in the light of the Word of God, the light of praise and worship, the light of the Jesus Christ, and somebody that doesn't. What's going on here? What kind of fellowship can we really have together in the core of our being? What harmony, I like that word, harmony. What harmony is between Christ and Belial, or Christ and the devil? Tell me, what harmony does Jesus have with the devil? Is there any harmony there? No, they're opposites. What does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? Now, Christians who want to get married don't like this passage. Here's why: it shrinks the playing field. It greatly diminishes the possibilities. And here's what people convince themselves is going to happen. I love them so much. They love me so much. Our love is so powerful that my love is going to win them for God. It just doesn't work that way, folk. You're going to have some problems if there's disagreement spiritually. I want to ask you this. What is deeper? What goes deeper into the core of you than when you come to a place where you realize and identify and experience the love of God, the love you have for God and the love God has for you? What is deeper than that? What goes deeper into a person's core than a relationship with Jesus Christ where it's not debatable anymore whether I'm going to serve Him, whether I'm going to go to church, whether I'm going to attempt to bring people to Jesus? What goes deeper into the core of a person than that? So if that's not there, see, we can storms and problems and things like that with politics, or maybe even how we're going to discipline the kids or do our finances. We can maybe weather that storm. But see, when this is happening, when this is going on in a marriage, this is a marriage breaker. Not because she wants to go to church and he doesn't, or he wants to go to church and she doesn't. Not because of that, but because there's so many other things that are hooked to this. Everything about life is hooked to Jesus. And everything about life is hooked to him or her if they're not a Christ follower. So how it's just big. And you'll have this difficulty for the rest of your life. An ache inside of you. Let me put a parenthesis here, and there should be a parenthesis with every single point I've made. There's always the exception to the rule. And there's the exception to this rule. And I've seen God do it. I've seen God just break in on somebody that seemingly had no interest at all in God. I've just seen God just break in, man and woman, and break in on their lives. And all of a sudden, it's such a beautiful thing to see this change happen to a person. It's a beautiful thing. But what that marriage had to go through to get there. Let me say it this way. I love, you know, standing there beside my wife. She was years on praise team, and now she's down with me. And or we can be here, or we can be at another church worshiping together. And I'll just tell you, when I look over at her, And she's got her hands in the air. And her face has this expression of love on it. And her eyes are closed. And her mouth is singing praises to Jesus or praying or whatever. I just can't tell you how deep that goes inside of me. It goes to the very, very core of my being. We pray together. We talk about scriptures together. We minister together. We've built our lives around Jesus Christ. And folks, I just tell you, I cannot imagine trying to spend the rest of my life with that not present there, with a person that I intend to live with until the day I die. I can't imagine it. And you see, the children become so confused. For one, church isn't important. For the other, it's the most important thing in the world. And so they get confused. Well, one goes to church and one doesn't. One says it's important, one says it's not. And so the children say, I'm not going today. It must not be important. Mom's not going or dad's not going. I'm staying here with them, watch television. That must be what's important. Now, you know I'm trying to help, right? You know I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help somebody. I'm doing my best. But I know that some of you are living in this very arena right now. And I'm not talking about you, and I'm not trying to be mean. You know I'm not. And it's not that I'm not compassionate. I am so compassionate for you. But you know, better than anyone, this ache I'm talking about. This void. You know that you and your spouse are missing something intimate. Something that goes to the very deep of your core. And maybe I can't help you. Maybe I can't. But maybe I can help your children. You see, your children have one life. Just one life. And you owe it to them to tell them how important this is. And that this is phenomenally important in selection of a spouse. If you are going to be a Christ follower, if you're going to have a relationship with Jesus Christ, you must marry somebody with a like relationship. Because you know the ache. Maybe I can't help you, but maybe you can help your grandchildren. Maybe you can take this, because spiritual compatibility is a must for a good marriage. Now, marriage is a decision that will go with you for the rest of your life, one way or the other. It's a decision you can't afford to mess up, and you don't have to. But sadly, some of you have already figured out, I can mess it up. And for you, here's what I want to say. Maybe you're married. You're still married, but your marriage is on the rocks and it's not doing well. Maybe God's going to do something amazingly beautiful for you. Maybe God's going to put it back together and help you. Maybe God's going to do something great here. That's my prayer for you. Take what you've learned today. Go home. Talk about these things. Discuss these things. Find out where we can work here together. And let me go back to my last point that I said on the spiritual compatibility. Listen, take it from me. You can weather some of the worst storms of life. If that one's there. If that one's there, you can go through just about anything. But if that one's not there, I watch these movie stars, I watch these celebrities going through the stuff they go through. That's the one they don't have. They can do all the rest of it, but I'll watch what they go through. If they don't have that spiritual compatibility, it's over. Marriage is going to go with you for the rest of your life. And if you're in a shaky one right now, then my prayer for you is that you'll take what you're learning today and go home and sit down and discuss this stuff in love and say, okay, what can we do? What adjustments can we make? Maybe in your particular case, maybe you've already experienced the tragedy of a divorce, and what a heartbreak that is. And it hurts for you. So you're not dead. So God's got something else for you. Most likely you're going to meet someone along the way. So take what you learn here and make it right next time. Make it so that you know when you walk that aisle that I've got the person that I'm going to live with forever. And we're going to have a good life. And others of you, and this is who it's really for, are not married yet. You've never been married, but one day you will be. Listen, you don't have to mess it up. If you'll take these things like you're learning and seeing today, you'll apply these things to your life, I promise you, you're going to come out of it well married. Marrying well. you will find the lifelong partner who will bring you lifelong love, lifelong intimacy, lifelong happiness, lifelong joy. But it's all centered around marrying well. Let's pray. Father, thank you for our time today and our gathering and for all these people, Lord. And I pray that for those that listen on television, on CDs, DVDs, whatever, Lord, that the Spirit is just as strong upon them as it is right here today. And that, Lord, these truths are impacting our lives. And even in the best of marriage, we can still take these things and make adjustments. But Father, my prayer today is for those who have the heartbreak of a dysfunctional marriage, a heartbreak of a divorced marriage. And Father, for those who have yet to be married. Father, I pray that each one takes it by the Spirit and takes what you've taught them today and utilizes it so they will marry well and have great marriages. With your heads bowed and your eyes closed, some of you just have right now, you know, you'd rather be in the attic. You'd rather be in the desert. You'd rather be on the roof. That's not where you want to be. It's just where you found yourself lately. And you're saying, man, I want to fix this. Like we talked last time, you know, you got to go back to the spouse of your youth. What was it that fired you up then? It'll fire you up again. For you, I really want to pray. So, if that's you, and your marriage just is not doing well, or maybe, you know, it's just turned south and not doing good, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but I am going to pray for you. And for others of us here, you know, we've got pretty good marriages, but there are things that we need to talk about. And for others of us that are not married yet, but we're going to be married, then, you know, we've got a lot to talk about. So I want to just pray that kind of a prayer for all of us. Father, right now, in Jesus' name, I ask you, Lord, to move upon each life what they need. Lord, there are good marriages. They can be better. There can be adjustments. There are marriages that are struggling, Lord. And Lord, they can be fixed. There are people here yet, Lord, that have suffered the heartache of a failed marriage. And Lord, I want their heart healed and I want them to have the love of their life. So Father, I ask you to help them, touch them by your Spirit and heal them and lead them, Lord, the way that they need to go to find that person. And Father, for those that have not yet married, Father, I pray for each one of them, Lord, that each person will marry well. Thank you for my wife. Thank you for blessing me. Head still bowed and your eyes closed. Now, some of you, you're just not where you need to be with God. You're not only does your marriage stink, but everything about life stinks. You're not happy. You're not where you need to be with God, and that's why it's probably the way it is. You see, you can fix so much if you have a right relationship with God. And you're just not where you need to be with God, and you know it. You know it. You came in this building today knowing it. I want to pray for you before you go. So if that's you, get beyond marriage. Just get back into your core. You know at the core of your being, you're not where you need to be with God. If that's you today, and you want to make that right, start getting on the right track with everything, if that's you today, would you rest right where you're sitting? Would you just raise your hand and just let me pray for you? I see a hand here. Any others? I see a hand in the back. I see your hand. Any others? See one over here. Yes. See you. Thank you, Lord. Lord, you've moved on our hearts today. You've challenged us.